I want to welcome everyone back for lap 7 of the Sideways podcast with my co-host Scotty Taylor. Just got back from a little trip traveling around the country. We had a little bit of an incident on the way out there, but we're all good. He was able to make it home safe, sound, got to see a little bit of the world, and here we are. We got a great podcast coming up. How are you doing, Scotty, now that you're back home?
Yeah, it's good to be back home. Fun little trip after a snafu at the beginning. Maybe I'll get into that with you guys here in a little bit, since we're going to be talking to somebody who's been quite the traveler themselves. Tease. But yeah, I got to see Denver, Colorado. Got to go to Nashville and see some friends there as well back home. And it was a pretty exciting weekend for me and also for the sport of flat track. We had a big handful of races, actually, that took place over the weekend.
There was a lot going on in Florida last night and across the country, completely all the way to the other side. Was it Oregon or Washington?
So Michael Hill, he had his race in Astoria, Oregon. First time he's put on an event out there, and seemed like everything went really well for him, and he seems excited about potentially keeping that going. It's like Eric Beers took home the victory in the pro class out there.
Yeah, I liked the shape that he made. It was just different, you know, kind of a diamond. It allows for a little bit different racing. And on a short track like that, an indoor, it is extremely hard to pass without knocking somebody down. So it's cool that he was able to try that, and awesome that we've got another first-time promoter.
Yeah, great to see Michael getting involved with that. And then you mentioned Florida, Panhandle Clash. A lot of fun stuff coming out of that. A great rider turnout. Every year, it seems like Robbie Bobby and that crew get an amazing turnout of competitors down there. You got the Turner team there. First Impressions was down there. Sadoff was down there. Santero, a lot of really good riders. And I got to give a huge shout out to this new Instagram account that popped up. Going in Circles Interviews had some really fun interactions with the riders, talking about some of the chaos that took place over the weekend.
I watched that this morning while I was cooking eggs, making breakfast. It was a nice little entertaining bit behind the scenes there, you know, because there wasn't a ton of coverage from there. Robbie Bobby did what he could with the live streams, but I mean, he's got 6 hats on. He's trying to run the race while got his phone out, and he's completely smooth with that. I don't know how he's doing it all. So yeah, it was nice to be able to listen to those interviews on Instagram this morning. There was a lot going on. I wish we had better coverage, because especially of the race that everyone was cutting the cones. I wish I had a good view of like them finally working their way all the way down to the grass. And I saw that Billy Ross was kind of feeding into a little bit. I guess he must have won that race because he posted cashes in the bank.
Yeah, it looks like Billy got a win on the weekend. Trevor Bruner picked up a couple of wins on the weekend. Going back through the notes I had, I was trying to keep up with everything on Race Monitor while visiting some friends out there, and probably got on their nerves. But yes, Chase Sadoff got another one down there. Chase is a lot of fun to watch at that racetrack. There was a neat little video that somebody shared on their story of Chase just goofing off during a heat race. Looked like he hopped on Landon Smith's KTM for the weekend. And then, yeah, we talked about Bruner won a couple of Bruner races and won that big 50 lapper that they had on Thursday night, and we got some pretty exciting official news about Trevor.
Yeah, and I think instantly, I was talking about it this morning, Trevor Bruner going back to the Turner Honda team, he did a little bit of a test session, a little behind-the-scenes test session at Nice's a couple weeks ago, riding the Hondas again, and then this week, you know, finally the press release came out that he is back with Turner Honda for the 2025 season, and instantly a title contender, in my opinion, a high, strong title contender, in my opinion, especially, you know, with what he's done in the past, and then seeing his riding and knowing his aggression level and being able to move back to the singles class from the twins class. He's going to have a lot of different experience that these kids that he's going to be racing against don't have.
Yeah, and he was, like you said, he was a proven winner on those Turner bikes. You know, I think he won a couple of mile races on those bikes as well. He was really competitive when he moved over to the Estensen 450s, and was the Twins Rookie of the Year last year, and him going back to that team, he's looked really, really good on those Hondas the past little bit. So granted, obviously we're talking about outlaw racing versus AFT events, but Trevor is definitely going to be in the title hunt.
Yeah, and we'll get into it more when it comes closer to Daytona, but one big thing that is a difference between then and now is I think that back then when he was racing, they still had Brian Bigelow doing all the engines and a lot of the mechanic work there, where now Brian's obviously just working specifically and exclusively with Sadoff.
which has paid huge dividends for Chase's program. And no doubt he's going to be right there in the hunt. I think this singles class, you know, I said it last year and then I was wrong about there potentially being 6-7 different winners, but I feel like we've got a really sporty season upon us for the 450s. And then another announcement that came out just recently, officially with the twins class, and that is James Ott's partnered up with your whole team.
Yeah, no, it's kind of something that I knew about for a while now, and it worked out good with me stepping away. Getting my injury midseason wasn't great, but then shortly after that, you know, it gave them time to go home and start preparing the bikes for James. And James had been kind of grooming into this spot for a while. You know, they've been working closely, James and Paul, with the team, and we always pitted together, and Paul was always very instrumental in trying to help me get my bikes to the best capability that I could ride them. So, yeah, it's exciting for James. He's been talking about trying to take this step up for a long time, and being able to do it with a group like LJ and John, the nicest people, no pressure. He's going to have time to come into his own. He's not going to be forced to, you know, go out there and take any risk, because it's just going to be, you know, go have fun, learn. If you do great, that's awesome. If you struggle, well, that's a learning experience. So no better group of people for James to move up with than LJ and John.
Yeah, it'll be exciting to see him step up in the twins class. We've seen Trent testing that Honda twin pretty much all off season. So we'll see if anything gets announced about that officially. I don't believe they've put anything out with that, but potentially a couple of really exciting rookies to move up into the class, and a good time to do so with all the moving parts in the twins class. I think it's a good chance for guys to you know, test the waters.
Yeah, without the Indian being there and everyone having to get back onto production bikes. And I'll talk about it later, but I think that the Essensen bike is going to be handicapped a bit. It's going to be a little bit closer getting rid of some of those electronics, the traction control. I don't think it's as big of a factor as most people probably think, but getting rid of the wheel speed sensors will help bring that bike back to where the rest of the class is, just because the rest of the class can't afford and doesn't have the technology nor the personnel to be able to map it and build the bike around that traction control. So yeah, it's a great time to be moving up to the twins class. I'm very excited to watch. And like you said, with Trent, he's probably not as much doing testing as he is just trying to get some seat time, man. It's good that he has the actual race bike, the same chassis as it. It's probably a different engine. But for him to just be able to be doing laps, and it's tough too. He's grinding it out. You know, he's not getting good results right now because he's sacrificing being on a twin on a track where a 450 obviously has got the upper hand. So kudos to him for sticking it out and working on trying to be better for 2025.
Yeah, with those two guys, I mean, potentially being up in the twins class next year, it's an exciting time. And you talked about, you know, some of the effects of those rule changes with the affecting the Essensen bike. I feel like we have somebody that we could talk to that might have some insight on that and be able to give us some more feedback on what to expect from that in 2025.
So excited for the guest that we have tonight. He's an old teammate of mine. He's American Flat Track's youngest rising star, able to come up with third place this past year, but succumbed to a leg injury in the middle of the season and had to miss a few rounds, but came back strong towards the end. We've got Matt Toon, Illinois' own Dallas Daniels.
Hello.
How you doing there, buddy?
Am I still muted, or can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear, 10-4.
All right, perfect. I'm doing good. How are you guys?
Can't complain, man. I'm not fainting on airplanes tonight, so we're in better shape than we were a few days ago.
Yeah, man, I hear that. It takes a few days to get acclimated after flying. What did you pass out in an airplane?
Yeah, I've had a fair share of fainting spells. I've actually fallen out in my car once on the way down to bike week, and thought we had everything under control. Still don't know what the cause of it is, but yeah, I decided to be dramatic on an American Airlines flight to Denver and stood up, went back to talk to the flight attendants, and then everything went dark and I woke up on the ground. But at least somebody was holding me, so it was nice to have human touch.
Yeah, that's gnarly. Jeez, I don't know. I shouldn't be laughing, I guess. Yeah, that sucks. But at least nothing's wrong, I guess.
I don't even know how to come back after that. We joked about it a little bit earlier. But how was Nick on that flight to Australia? I remember early on when I started working with Nick, he was driving wherever he could go because flying was not his forte. So how long was that flight to Australia, and then how did he handle it?
Yeah, you can imagine how Dad is on flights. Sometimes when we get some turbulence, I look over and he looks like he's just about to shit himself. And I was definitely nervous for him about this one, just because we flew out of LA because it's a little bit closer if you go out of there. It's only 13 and a half, 14 hours. But he was doing fine. We flew on the way there. It was kind of not the best. We didn't plan it the best. We had to go from St. Louis to Salt Lake to L.A. and then to Sydney, where when we came home, we went Sydney to L.A., then L.A. straight to St. Louis. But he was doing fine, and then we went to board the flight, and it was the two-story, like, big bus plane. He's like, have you ever seen a plane that big? And I'm like, no. He's like, there's no other thing I'm going to get off the ground. And it's like, and then he started like getting a little nervous, but no, he did good. He slept pretty much, not the whole time, but just about. And actually, to be honest, the bigger planes, smooth ride, so it was pretty easy.
Like a Cadillac, just the whole way.
Oh yeah, it was perfect. Every time I checked on him, he was doing fine. So
well, that's a great thing to kick this off, dude. You traveling down to Australia to compete in the Brisbane Cup and some of those Australian flat track races they had down there. Yeah, so we've talked about the flight. How was that experience, sort of, you know, mixing it up with the top guys down there?
Yeah, it's definitely different. I've gotten that question a lot, obviously, over just the last few days being home. But it's the way I kind of explain it is, like, things are different, and they do race different over there. But, like, anywhere you go in the country and you come across a racer, it's going to be essentially the same, right? It's like guys are there to win. The thing about those guys is like, they're really good, like, hard going straight from the start, because usually their races are like sprint races. Like, for an Australian title, I think you only get like four laps in a race. Where the Brisbane Cup, you got like, it was three eight lap heat races and then a 20 lap final. But for like the amateur kids, like they only got like six lap races all day. So it's pretty much the same to like a twins class. Like, as soon as the light goes out, it's pretty much balls to the wall the whole time. So it wasn't totally different for me, but I could tell, like, watching the amateurs, like, it was cutthroat. Like, they were, you know, it seemed like it meant a lot to them to win the race. And obviously Brisbane's like the biggest race of the year over there, it seems like, these days. But no, it was cool. The biggest difference was the tire setup. The 21-18 knobby on the front, trials tire on the rear. The trials tires will only last about like a 20 lap main event. That's pretty much cooked because they're so soft. That's kind of, you've probably seen the pictures of the thing like flexing so much it looks like it's about to come off the rim. And they're a different type of riding style. You pretty much go in and grab as much as you can and hope for the best. But they are kind of weird. Like, they will come out, like, step out on you. They do fold over. You can't lean them over as far. And like I said, I mean, you got to show up to the race with two or three tires just to last you the day. So that was probably the biggest difference, I would say.
So you could feel, like, the tire wiggling underneath you and the carcass of it moving around?
Yeah, like, what you saw in that picture, you couldn't quite feel like that, like, because that looks pretty drastic. But, like, when you would stab the throttle, you could feel the thing, like, wiggle around and hook up, and it would bite and go. But it was, one of the things that was weird is, like, because they're telling me, dude, just get in there and just forget everything you know, just grab a handful. And I'm like, all right. So I get testing it. And one time I grab a handful and it's going fine. And then about 10 feet later, it just steps completely to the lock. And I'm like, whoa. And I come back around and I come in. I'm like, what was that? They're like, oh, yeah, that happens. I'm like, oh, shit. Okay, well, I'm not sure what to do about that. And they're like, oh, nothing. It's just flexing and rolling over on you. I'm like, oh, all right, cool. Yeah, I guess we'll deal with that.
Do you think that, I talked to Andrew about it last week, do you think a tire like that could work at any place in America, like Medina TT?
Yeah, Matt and I talked about that. I definitely think on a cushion, yeah, they tried it. So the first race I did there was in Gunnedah on an oil track similar to Nioga, and they said it was horrible. Like, they couldn't even make it around the track. It was like riding on ice. But a cushion track like Medina, I think for sure, because on those things you can, like, carve it up pretty good. It's like riding a motorbike. Like, you can stop it, turn it. You know, sometimes with 19s, it's like you're making a real long arc when you're doing the turn. But they won't last. Like, I would say in the Grand Prix at Medina, you're going to smoke a tire probably halfway through just because they're so soft. Like, so I'm sure it would be better lap time wise, but as far as, like, like that's kind of why they're trying to get away from it over there, because it costs too much money. I mean, you got to show up with seriously 3-4 tires, and you're cutting them all day because they peel over the lugs, and they're just so soft. Like you can bend the sidewalls with your hands, like pretty much straight up and down. Like they're insanely soft.
It's a completely different like sport. It seems like you know, when you guys are over there and like the track layout and just seeing how everything's set up, even from the Australian Nationals to like Brisbane being its thing. But yeah, you talked about it being the biggest race for those guys down there. You got to dice it up with a MotoGP star. What was it like racing with Jack Miller down there?
Oh yeah, that's a great question, man. Jack Miller is just a top notch guy. Like he's just an amazing person. When he shows up at the race, you would, like, if you didn't know who he was, you didn't follow racing, you would think he's just some old country Australian that loves dirt bikes. Like he sponsors some kids, he promotes the race big time, and he's there to just have a good time. And he treats everybody, he's not above anybody. He treats everybody the exact same. And I really appreciate that about him. Like after the race, they're doing the podium and he's in his Crocs drinking a beer, like celebrating the win. Like he's just a down to earth dude. And so to be able to like, in my first heat race. So like I said, we did no qualifying. We did 1-2 lap practice and then we had 3 heat races and it was just random. And then the best overall scores set the 12-lap final. And he was in my first heat race. He actually ended up crashing right in front of me, like 2 laps to go. But just to, like, race with him and, like, watch how he rode, like, it's a different type of, you know, athlete a MotoGP rider is. And I've never raced with one. Like, I've raced with a guy of that caliber. And he's pretty gnarly. Like, he had to come back from a bad start to the day. Like I said, he crashed. He ended up winning the thing. And it was funny because it's like this dude races all over the country, rides for factory teams, makes big money. And it looked like that race meant the biggest thing to him when he won. Like he was so, the next race after us was a 4-wheeler race. He pulls up right in front of them on the start line because it's a concrete gate and just does a smoke and burnout, smokes out the whole starting gate. And the quads are like in the gate and they're started ready to go. And I'm like, this is amazing. Like this guy just won this race and like he's done so much bigger things. But yeah, long story short, I mean, it was amazing. It was super cool.
Is this something that you would like to go back and compete in again? You know, we see in sprint car racing and supercross racing, you see guys get to go down to Australia during the winter months here in the States and sort of build up those events down there. And it definitely draws a lot of attention to different facilities. And it's been cool to see, like, you know, Australian National Flat Tracks YouTube stuff and looking at you and Tom and Max, you know, racing down there. And then Colby was down for Brisbane. So is this something that you would like to make like an annual trip?
Yeah, for sure. My dad and I were talking about that. And I was telling, you know, the trip originally came as like, I wanted to go visit the Drains and Max Whale and good friends of mine just that have become good friends over years of obviously seeing them and them coming to the States and just something I wanted to experience, but also like going to those races. I kind of, as I get older, I really want to do my part in trying to help motorcycle racing, especially flat track, and just bring awareness to it. You know, like I think it's an awesome sport and it's super cool. And I think the more places I travel and the more places I race or show myself there, it might spark interest and some other, you know, like maybe some Australian kids would want to come over here and try to race. And a lot of them are very talented. I think they could do it. So that too, like I wanted to experience the lifestyle and see my friends, my Australian friends. There's other people over there that I've met over the years and I want to do those races, but also on not being selfish, I wanted to, like, you know, be the face of America essentially, like Cody and I were, and bring awareness to flat track and show them that, like, you know, they should come over and give it a try and try to get more people into racing motorcycles, whether that's in Australia, America, or whatever. You know,
that's great doing that part, like trying to spread the awareness and just do what you can to try to grow the sport, because it is something that is so important right now and so pivotal, trying to grow flat track, because it is on a little bit of like of a teeter totter of trying to, I think all motorsports and really a lot of outdoor activities in general right now, just trying to get people to keep getting the youth and getting the next generation involved with it. But when you were over there and you got to go to the Drains place, I saw you rode there one day. I've seen some pictures and videos before. Their place is pretty sick, isn't it?
Oh man, the Drains place is amazing. They really have, it's amazing what they have. And you know, it's really amazing when you talk to them and like they've earned everything they got. Like Matt kind of, you know, the Drains and Matt, they kind of like, you know, he just kind of makes it seem like, oh yeah, I've got this business in Australia that I make trailers, but dude, it's like, it's a legit business. Like he has a storefront, he sells power tools, bolts, like just like an AutoZone or a Harbor Freight. And then he also in the back is like making trailers. Like it's like a, it's a really top notch business. And, you know, for that reason, there's, he's been very successful. And his wife, Lisa, you know, Tom and Sam's mom works there as well. And, you know, they do very well. And so, his place is super cool. He's got flat track, motocross track, and pretty much everything you need to be a great motorcycle racer. And so it was cool to go there. They kind of live in a small town, like, you know, where I'm from. So it felt like home. And we kind of just did our stuff there, did some riding and stuff. And, you know, obviously, like, the sightseeing kind of came when you travel. Like, we went to Melbourne, Supercross, and some other stuff. But really there, I really just wanted to hang out at their house because it was just a sweet spot. And, like I said, pretty much had everything we needed. So it was definitely a lot of fun hanging out there.
Is it tough for you and Tom to sort of, like, how is Tim with you guys as far as running, racing, like, in the off season? Obviously, he wants, you know, to make sure you guys are good to go for the nationals in the upcoming year. Do you guys ever have to sort of like ask his blessing, or what are those conversations like to run your own stuff during the off season?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, it's one of those deals. Like when I was on a 450, and this is the same for Tom, is you kind of do what you want because you're still growing. You're still a kid. You're still trying to learn all the ins and outs of racing. And so you just kind of race whenever you can. Where when you get on a twin, you're in the premier class and, you know, you're racing for a bigger paycheck and racing the legit guys and guys that do this for a living. There is something to be said of, and this is no downgrade to the singles class, I did it, like there's a difference between racing kids and racing men. you know, kids, Chase Sadoff, Tom Drain, used to be myself. Those guys are racing because they love it. When you start racing Jared Mees and Briar Bowman, JD Beach, Brandon Robinson, those guys, they race so they can put food on the table. And that's a big difference. So when I got on a twin, it went from, you know, I'm kind of do what I want to, hey, you got to kind of ask now because there's a lot more to lose. Premier Championship's a huge deal in my eyes and the team's eyes. So I usually have to ask, and I mean, he does too. You know, when he's in the States, I mean, you're not going to race the night before a national and stuff. But yeah, I usually have to ask the blessing. And I had to ask about that, doing the races over there. And they were cool with it, you know, because it's the off season and because they wanted Estensen to be promoted and me to do those races. And like all I said about trying to promote the USA and stuff. And they thought it'd be cool. They enjoyed following along and seeing us race with Jack and all those guys. So. But yeah, my days of racing outlaw races are not done, but they're definitely slowed down just because American Flat Track Twins is my top priority. And I think that's how it is for most Twins riders.
I like that point you made of, you know, boys and men. It's kind of like in the singles class, you're racing for Nike dunks and like clothes and fun stuff. When, you know, in the premier class, you guys are racing for mortgage payments and to put food on your kids' plates. And
exactly.
It is a big difference. That was a good way to put it. That brought me to like the question of not racing the night before nationals and stuff kind of brought me to your injury last year in training for, you were riding motocross near your home at a track you've spun probably a couple thousand laps on, and you ended up getting hurt, a freak accident. Is that going to change your training moving forward at all?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think it just kind of changes a lot of things. So for one, going back to what Scotty asked, how you have to ask, I mean, obviously having that injury and the time frame I had it, it definitely changed things. I do have to ask to do a lot more now just because I lost a lot. I mean, let's be real. You know, I threw a lot down the drain. So when you ask that question, if I'm going to change anything with my training, absolutely not. The reason that I got where I'm at is because I did what I did. Now, the week before Peoria, am I going to go to a prep practice on a weekend? Probably not. Or if there's a triple at the track that only a few guys are doing and I think I can hit it, am I going to hit it? Probably not. And if I'm the fifth fastest guy, am I going to put myself in the hay bales trying to be fastest? No. Like, I feel like I've matured, and I feel like in Australia, I feel like this injury has matured me. And I noticed that when I went to Australia and I started riding on a dirt bike again, I rode some motocross again, and I just found myself just being more aware, not riding timid or worried about getting hurt, just being more aware of the decisions I'm going to make and the impact it'll have if I do make those decisions. So I think it's not that I'm going to change my training program. I'm just going to change, you know, the risk. There was plenty of times that I'm sure Colby can say too, when we were training, I probably did things that I shouldn't have and got away with it, doing jumps or running my bike out of gas, going up the face of a jump when I was like 15. Like, I'm just going to be wiser. At least I hope.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's nothing's going to change. Just trying to be smarter, you know?
That's a good point. The smart thing just comes, like you just said, you've made some errors in the past, like those things with the bikes and just, or trying to be the fastest guy in a moto day. And one thing that immediately came to my head was in Daytona in 2018. I was, you know, I won my heat race over Bromley and Janish, who ended up going 1-2 that night. And then in the semi, because we were doing heats and semis that year, in the semi, I had started next to Jake Lewis, who's a great starter, and I could have easily passed him on the second lap down the front straightaway because he was on a stock bike. But instead, I, you know, had the number one on my bike, and I got into a pissing contest right off the bat, and I run into the side of him and break my shoulder blade about 50 feet from the starting line. And like, that's one thing that moving forward, you're never going to make a mistake like that again. You just learn, and you know, you're so young, and yeah, it just, I'm sure the things, looking back, the things you've probably learned from when you turned 16 and you were number 163 to now being 32 and winning Grand National races is miles and miles above what you knew then.
Yeah, for sure. That's a perfect example, what you bring up, of 2018. And I remember that, watching that. And yeah, it's just, you know, I look back on, you know, I'm 21. I'm still really young, and I've got hopefully a lot of years of racing ahead. And I look back at some of the things I've learned and did, and I'm like, wow, you know, I've come a long way. But really, I'm like, I'm one of those guys that's like, I don't mind. Obviously, this mistake sucked to make, but I don't mind making mistakes myself because I want to learn from them. And there's a lot of people in my life, like my dad or JD or yourself or older people, that be like, hey, you know, don't do that because this will happen. And I listen, but it's good to make those mistakes. It helps you grow as a person, and, you know, you mature, and you just hopefully never do them again, you know?
Yeah, that's I was going to ask what your advice was going to be for singles kids coming in, but I mean, just being able to learn from mistakes and to apply, you know, those moving forward on a race-to-race basis, like, you pretty much nailed that right there. I was curious, with, when it comes to the training, we see everybody doing like motocross stuff. And I'm also, like, this off season, it's been interesting to see Trent Lowe on that Honda Transalp so much. And they're doing a lot of, you know, testing and development with that bike. But how often do you get to hop on your twin in the off season and sort of be, for, you know, do testing and prep for the Nationals?
You know, it just kind of depends. Obviously, our team's based in Owensboro, Kentucky, so it's in the winter months. We're pretty much shut down on riding around there. But we usually get a couple tests in a year before the start of the season, as well as a couple tests throughout the season. The number of those, just like I said, varies on what's going on and new parts we got coming in or what and whatnot. But I do get a practice twin in a separate chassis. So like our oval chassis and our TT chassis, it's essentially the same as a TT chassis that we race. And it's just got a stock MT07 engine in it with an electric start, something really easy for a turbo mechanic like me to be able to maintain during the winter months and summer months when I have it. So I have that I pretty much, anytime I ride flat track, I ride on that just because, like I said, it's pretty easy to ride. And I have a flat track 450, but I don't know. I just, you know, I really enjoy riding the twin, whether it's, or when I go to the track, sometimes it's not the fastest and it's not the easiest to ride, but I have fun riding it. So I do that. But as far, you know, like I said, as far as riding the the race bike, I really don't ride it unless the team's there. Like I said, that's outside of a couple tests here and there. And maybe sometimes they'll let me spin a few laps on it before a race or something. But yeah, it just kind of depends. It depends on what's going on, you know?
Yeah, no, they just, they give you the bike that they have a couple extra chassis of that, like you said, are easy to work on and can take a little collateral damage.
Yeah, yeah. Them, I've definitely been everything but easy on this thing I rode. And luckily they give it to me and I just essentially got to clean the air filter, lube the chain, and don't get any water in the battery. So I haven't done anything like that yet, but this one I had last year, it stopped running and it was, yeah, an ordeal. So I try to just do the best maintenance I can on it. There's no way they're ever giving me a race bike. It would come back not looking anything like it should.
And those race bikes, too, they're so much more complex. Like, when you look at that TT chassis, it's pretty simple. Anyone could really start to tune on that thing, even if you're just a normal dirt track guy. But when you get your oval chassis, there are so many different ways to adjust that and the linkages and shocks and... That's a piece of art, that bike there. Have you guys had the opportunity yet to get out there and test? And I guess, like, the biggest thing that I've been really curious about this off season with the rule changes is, have you had the time yet to test the difference now that you don't have a wheel speed sensor for traction control and you just have to go off the crank?
Yeah, so it was a little paused on that deal because after the last few races, I obviously still had an injury. My leg was still healing, so we pretty much took some time off just to let me try to get back to 100%. But yeah, we have rode a few times, and it's funny because there's a lot of people online that think that wheel speed sensor means nothing, and that is a pretty big thing they're taking away. So it does make the bike react differently. So we haven't played around with it a ton. And just simply just because I haven't been able to be on the bike a lot because, like I said, my body just hasn't allowed it. But yeah, it's definitely something we're going to visit. And it's definitely a big change, not just for us, but for anybody that was using it. I guess I don't really know if anybody was or not. But yeah, no, it is a big change for sure. So just something we're going to have to adjust to and move forward.
I think it's a bigger change than some people on the internet believe. I think it actually is going to make a pretty big difference. It's definitely going to make your electronics guy's life harder to try to get you as comfortable with that being taken away as, you know, having the wheel speed sensor. It's going to be a lot harder to get the right data and to be able to map it the same way as I would imagine when the wheel speed sensor is there. So, yeah, I've just been an advocate for trying to say, like, it's going to be a lot different and it's going to be harder and much bigger change than people think on paper.
No, for sure. And it's, like I said, I don't know a lot about it, but just the stuff I've learned and it, like I said, it is funny sometimes when people think that it's not and not a bunch and it doesn't sound like a bunch, like, oh, there's a little sensor on the front wheel. I can't do too much, but it does a lot more than people think. And it's not, like I said, it's not make or break and the rules are the rules. So, you know, just had to figure it out.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, the traction control is not make or break. Like, there, if you didn't have traction control last year or the year before, you still would have been just fine.
Yeah, I wonder sometimes if people, I think certain things on the motorcycle is the only reason we win races. But it, like, you know, it's a combination. It's a team. It's the rider. It's the bike. It's the whole deal that makes the wheels go around. It's even if you have a crappy rider and a crappy chassis and crappy wheels, if you have traction control, you're not going to go to the front. You know, you need the whole package. So it's a team effort. It doesn't matter what they take away, what they give us. You still got to figure out how to get the job done. And there's more pieces to the puzzle than just that one thing, you know?
Yeah. A 10th place rider on your bike is not going to immediately make them a top five guy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Some people think traction control is just magic.
Yeah.
But that's usually people that have never used it before. So
it's always funny. Like, I'd be talking to people in the pits and I'm pretty good at just keeping my mouth quiet. Like, I don't have to be right when it comes to talking with people, and they'll start talking about specifically your bike and they'll be like, yeah, that traction control, if I had that, or man, if they didn't have that traction control, they would not. And I'm like, what are you talking? You have no idea. It does not work that good. This is on dirt. It's not on asphalt.
Yeah, it's not as simple as people think. Like, when you watch a MotoGP guy or some super bikes, you know, they can just go into the corner sometimes and stab the throttle. and the computer just works it out. But on dirt, it's not that way, just because the surface is ever changing, the wheels are spinning, the motorcycle's trying to go one direction, you're trying to take it the other, and yeah, it's not it's more complex, but you know, just is what it is, I guess.
You know, you talk about it being, you know, a more complex machine. When you, you know, started off in the singles class, you had a couple of, you know, decent results, didn't set the world on fire. You got that first win at Peoria. But then when you stepped up to the twins class, you were immediately in the hunt for podiums and race wins. What made that transition to the twins class so, I'm not going to say easy, but so successful for you?
Well, I can tell you one thing is my whole life I've dreamt of one thing, and that's being Grand National champion. And with that goal was just wanting to be in the expert class. My whole life I've wanted to be a Grand National racer. And obviously bonuses were winning a race, getting on the podium, winning a championship, those type of things. But really, I so bad as a kid just wanted to have my national number. And that's why it still does. It bothers me that they give the singles class 2-digit numbers, because I was just a kid that grew up in the era of, like, you earned your national number and only the expert guys got a national number. But regardless, not to get off on a tangent, you know.
Preach it. Preach it.
Yeah, I'm on that hill too, but I'm back in the 36B days.
That's right, yeah. I would have happily ran, you know, a letter, a P, I think it was, for Illinois, just because it's just like I said, when I was a kid, man, those guys were gladiators. They were the heroes of the world in my eyes. And they were these guys that you wanted to be so bad. And so I think that played a lot in it. And obviously, like, I dedicated a lot of time. I spent a lot of time on a twin leading up to my rookie season and was prepared. And obviously I had a great team behind me and a lot of very knowledgeable people that were able to share information with me. Going back to that conversation Colby and I at the beginning of the podcast, not letting me make mistakes, stopping me before I made those mistakes, and helping guide me in ways I didn't know. And obviously, you know, that year the class was a little bit weaker. There wasn't a lot of people, but I was still up inside the top five. And I believe it's just as hard to be in the top five as it was, you know, 20, 30 years ago. You know, some people argue that, but I think the biggest thing was, man, is I just dreamed of it. And when you dream of it, you manifest it and you make it happen. And that's kind of what happened.
You kind of will it into existence. And then just like you said too, everyone, you know, a lot of people will talk about how the quantity is not there, but in the top five, the quality is the same as it was 30 years ago. Just because there's not 79 of us racing, it doesn't matter. Those top five are still just as bad. You know, you put those top five guys back in 1980, 1990, and they're going to, you know, still find their way to the front.
No, exactly. And I learned that the hard way. The first time I ever lined up for a national, Zev Volusia half mile in 2022. And I win my heat race, I'm sitting on pole, and in my head I'm thinking, man, this twins class ain't that hard. I'm going to go out here and do just like I did in the 450 class. And, you know, just cocky, arrogant rookie kid. And myself, I wasn't saying it out loud. And I lined up on that start line, and I go through the first turn, I'm getting bumped and banged, and I'm up by the fence, and I'm, like, just all over the place. And I come around and get the green flag, and I'm in 10th. And I'm like, what the hell happened? Oh, like, I didn't even think I did anything wrong, and that's just... That's what I mean when you race men, man. And right then I realized, man, this can't take me a minute. And but even as much as it was discouraging, it was like, you know, I was happy because I'm like, all right, man, I'm here. I just got to figure it out.
So I remember that feeling that when I'd find my way in the front, that was overwhelming when you are racing with men. Because like when you're racing with the boys in like the singles class and stuff, these are kids you've grown up with your whole life. And then racing in the twins class, the expert class, it's when you're getting moved around in the first corner, you thought that you were riding hard in the singles class.
Yeah, I know exactly. And you thought like, man, I raced with this guy and this guy, and we had this battle, and, you know, this guy took me out. I had, like, these guys were aggressive. Nah, man, you leave an inch, that guy's poking his wheel in there, and you're getting out of the way whether you want to or not. It's just like the art of racing. And it's funny because even like talking to Max Whale after his season, he's like, you guys just like get in there, and then you're just like everywhere, and you just figure it out. I'm like, no, dude, it's normal. It's just how these guys live their life. It's uncomfortable, but It is what it is.
You're such a, now I'm always impressed with how much of a historian you are and just how much appreciation you have for flat track racing, you know, and just the past champions of the sport and how much knowledge you have of the sport itself. For somebody who, you know, you called those guys gladiators, was it ever difficult for you to balance sort of how much respect you have for these guys who you looked up to versus like, you know, screw that dude, I'm coming to win today?
Yeah, no, not really. The respect, that's another thing I'd like to touch on in the twins class is there's a lot of respect there. The twins guys respect each other. And I think sometimes in the singles class, there's a lack of respect. And to go on your thing about the history, I believe if you don't appreciate the history of the sport, then you really can't give out respect to those that do it. And I heard Chad Coase talking about it on Corey's podcast, and I really agreed with what he said. He's like, the kids these days, they don't appreciate the history. And I hate sounding like that, like these kids these days, because like I'm still a kid. But, you know, like I loved flat track racing so much, and I wanted to be like those guys so bad. And so when I got to that level and I had to race my heroes, it was tough to put aside, like, hey, this man, I just want to be like this guy, to like, I got to beat this guy. The first time I had to deal with it was actually Henry Wiles when he came back to the singles class. He was like my idol growing up, or one of my heroes. You know, I watched him win all those Peoria TTs, and he used to help me out when I was a kid and give me some advice. And he was just a really nice guy to me and other people that are around me. And it only took a few races, but it is tough. And there's something to say for that. You know, when you look up to a guy, then you've got to go to like, I want to beat this guy. It's a tough thing to do, because it's like, you know, I don't even really know how to explain it. If you haven't went through it, it's kind of hard to understand, but it's just, when you look at somebody like they're unreachable, and then now they're reachable, you just got to kind of switch that mindset. And it is tough. It was very tough for me as a kid, to want that last little bit to beat that guy. But then once you kind of do it, you just figure it out.
Without experiencing that, for the people listening to this, you have no idea the feeling. Like, there's a lot of things that have separated, you know, Dallas and I, and how far he's gone in his career and how much farther he's going in his career than I was ever able to do. But that was something I really, really struggled with. And honestly, I never overcame it. When it came to me being in the twins class and racing, you know, the few times I was towards the front, trying to overcome the fact, like it going through my head, it's like, I don't want to pass this guy, and I don't want to mess up his race because he's supposed to win this thing. So it...
No, it's exactly right. Yeah.
It's weird. And you've obviously been able to overcome it. But man, it is extremely tough. And it sounds simple. It's just like, oh, just go out there and race the guy. But it's like, you've been watching Jared Meese since you were 8 years old, going out there and winning Grand National races, and now you think you can just stick your nose in there?
Yeah, no, exactly. It's like you're racing along and you come across and it's like, Meese. Wow, I want to pass Jared Meese. Like, I can't pass Jared Meese. Jared Meese, you know, at the time, 7-time Grand National champion. It's like, why just no? And then, yeah, it's like, you hit it exactly right. And it's, people don't understand. And it even, like, my dad understood it. And it was one of those things that he's like, man, you just kind of get in there and you just got to get by him, man. You, like, you could have beat him, or you were faster than him. And I'm like, I know, but it's so-and-so. And he's like, yeah, man, I get it. But, like, you just got to do it. I'm like, no, I get it. And like I said, luckily I had those people around me, JD, Tommy, yourself, my dad, that just, you know, be like, hey, you know, it's just another guy, just something you got to deal with. And you know, you get over it, but it is a hurdle, and more of a hurdle than people want to admit. You know,
you talk about your battles with Jared over the past couple of years. You guys have really given us a treat in some of the back and forth racing that you've had. I guess my next thing is like sort of a two-part question, and first of which is, what was your favorite battle with Meese over the past few years? And then after that, like, what was the biggest thing that you gained as a rider from all these clashes with a champion like Jared?
Man, that's a good one. Favorite battle with Jared. I gotta pick one where I came out on top, right? No, I mean, that's there's only slim few. I had a lot of good battles with Jared, and man, that's crazy to say. He's a bad dude, and I'm just a silly kid from Illinois who likes to ride dirt bikes, and it's cool when you say it like that. It is, even though I'd never dethroned him as a champion, could've, shoulda, woulda, or whatever. It's amazing that I got to battle with him. He's a true legend. I don't know, Bridgeport, man, that one year, last year, we had a great battle, and I ended up getting him at the end, and that was my first half-mile win. That was pretty special. My first national win at Red Mile was big. We had a crazy battle at Chico. That one was good, too. I don't know, I gotta go Bridgeport. Bridgeport, I gotta pick one I won, or else he's gonna give me shit, but I definitely Bridgeport is my first half-mile win. I kind of come from the back, and Jared, man, he's one of those guys, like, that's why me and Expert, they just figure it out. Like, I come on him at Bridgeport, and I had some speed on him, and I got past those guys and kind of started to break him, and he just figured it out and got back to me, and we went at it. And the thing with Jared is anytime I beat him or he beat me, there's always respect, and we always shook hands at the end of the day, and we said, good race, and, see you next weekend. And that's, I think one of the biggest things I learned from going to your second part of your question is just being able to slow down that race in the middle of it and go to work. When I first started racing, even when I won my first national, I'll admit, because the rules, like, I had an upper hand on him. But, like, being able to be going triple digit speeds next bar to bar with guys and be able to go, okay, relax. I've got to think about this pass strategically. That's a hard thing to do. And, like, even I haven't even been close to figuring it out. And it's not something you can teach. It's not something you can go take a class for. It's not something you can practice. You've got to get in the situation. You got to do it. And he taught me that a lot. And he taught me a lot more than that too, just little things. And it was never spoke about, like, he obviously was trying to beat me, so he's not going to physically try to help me. But whether he knew he was helping me or not, and he was, I was learning so much from him. But that too, like, that dude can slow down a race the middle of the race with our heart rates freaking pegged at 190 and, just outclass me, outsmart me, and he can do it to anybody. Like, and all the top guys really can, but the 10-time champion, I mean, he can do it pretty damn good. So I'd say that was probably the main thing.
It was really interesting kind of watching, like, Jared's, rivalries through the year got really, really aggressive at times. Some of the stuff with him and Sammy Halbert, some of the races that he and Breyer had where they were, having real dicey battles. And then you guys, it was very just like that poetry in motion thing. Like, y'all would throw sliders at each other, but it rarely, if ever, was there contact, it seemed. And it was really fun to watch you guys dice it up the past couple of years. So, yeah, it's cool to see you sort of like push him to the limit. And I really feel like you might have even elevated his game tier toward the end of his career, if that's even possible. And I'm sure he'll never admit that. But shifting gears a little bit, we know Jared's stepping away, coming into 2025. The class is going to be sort of shaken up. We touched on the rules a little bit earlier on, but what are your thoughts on schedule? What are you looking ahead to into this upcoming season?
I'm really excited. Just the rules, the schedule, all that stuff. Like, for one, I'm not smart enough to know everything, and for two, whatever they give me, I got to go race. And obviously, you look at the schedule this year. Yes, there's a lot of short tracks, and the rule changes going to all production. Excuse me. It's gonna be different. I think everybody's a little bit nervous, but I do think that they're doing their best to try to make it a level playing field, make it more affordable, and keep flat track growing. I'm excited, man. I'm excited to go racing. I just love racing. And after this last year with everything that happened, I just want to race. I don't care what the rules look like. I don't care what the schedule looks like. I just want to get out there and get after it. I'm just really hungry. Just like I said, with how everything went down and the way I left, I don't even, not even losing the championship or anything, I don't feel like I got my fix of racing last year. I feel like I got cut short. I want to be able to eat from the table a little more, not win or lose or whatever, just be a part of it. That's what I want to do. Obviously I want to win and stuff, but being missing those races really sucks. So I'm just pumped, you know, whatever it looks like. I'm really excited for these Triple Crown things. That looks cool. I like it because it's different. I like it because it's a little more track time, and it's had some cool racetracks like Lima and Springfield. Those Triple Crowns, I think, are going to be pretty fun. More double headers. I'm a fan of double headers. Just being able to have that, like I said, that extra track time at the track. And if you struggle the first day, you got the second day. Or if you do good the first day, you got a chance to back it up. And so I think it's cool. I like everything about it. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, you've done well in the past couple of years at the Daytona doubleheaders. You've been able to – have you won them? Have you won all of them, or did you not win this year?
No, I got third this second night. So three in a row and then third. Yep.
Shit, what happened?
What, dude, just got beat, man.
Cards weren't there.
The old XR wasn't leaking coolant like she was that first night, so I couldn't sneak by her. You guys remember that? I thought memes, everybody would get on me about saying an air cooled XR leaked coolant. But no, man, I just got beat. There wasn't nothing to say about that. Just didn't have the must, you know.
And not enough food at the table that night.
No, I should probably blame it on somebody. So we'll just blame it on Tim. It's Tim's fault. We're not sure why.
No, I know what it was. I was going to ask this anyways later. If there was probably a race at some point this year that you didn't win, let's go Daytona. You were close. Hypothetically, my memory's bad, so I don't know exactly how far back you were. But say we had Kent there standing on top of the rig doing that Minnesota mile, just hand wave. you think that would have brought you to the victory that night?
I watched it bring that one to you. So I think that hand wave could bring me from 10th place 20 seconds back to a win. If I have a feeling Kent was in the stands at Oklahoma City when Ricky Graham come from 7th to win that thing. Man, that's a great story. You tell Scotty that. We're watching Colby at the Minnesota Mile, and he's winning the 450 race. First race, my dad's working for him, or second race. And it's cold as hell, and Kent's standing above everybody, and he's wearing this big hat. And I look over, and I'm like, what the hell is Kent doing? And he's got both hands above his head, and he's moving his wrists, pointing the direction. And I was like, what is that? And Colby ended up winning. But yeah, no, I think if I had Kent there, he would have. It definitely would have helped. Would have been a few tenths for sure.
That's funny. He'll get a kick out of that. So you'll probably be in Mattoon for the rest of the year until the New Year's, and then kind of the same deal as normal, just heading down to Florida, going down and start riding and training.
Yeah, that's the plan tentatively. Like I said, I was in Australia, spent a few weeks there. So just getting my fix of home time and resetting after the first of the year. Yep, we'll go down to Florida. I'm gonna go to Johnny Lewis's school and help him with that leading up to the Winter Throwdown. Plan to do the 1v1 at Corey's race at the Winter Throwdown. I did it. I've done it the last 2 years. I've actually went to Corey's race every year he's done it, whether I've raced or not. And the 1v1 is a really cool event, and it's a lot of fun. So I enjoy doing that. I'm gonna do that. My brother's gonna race as well. My dad's gonna be down there, so spend some time with them. And then they'll jet back home, and it's grind time for Daytona with JD, so it should be good.
Your little brother's getting spicy these days. Beckham, he's getting fired up.
Dude, he's no shortage of confidence or spice, that's for sure. We just got to find a little bit of speed. Everything else is there.
Yeah, we can work with that. We can work with speed.
That's right, yeah. No, we're trying to get less confidence. I don't know if you've ever heard about dealing with that in a kid, but we're trying to get them to not be so confident. So it's been an interesting tactic, but
it can't be easy. I mean, he's got Dallas Daniels as his older brother.
Yeah. He knows, and that means something to him, which is cool. But, sometimes he had to bring him back to ground zero.
With next year, I mean, we've talked on this several times about, you know, Cody Kopp was looking like he was trending into the twins class. He's shifting over into road racing. Was there, and you talked about your goal was to be Grand National Champion in flat track. Were there people trying to sort of get you to continue doing road racing? I mean, you've dabbled in that.
Yeah, no. Well, you know, my dad wanted me to do road racing simply to help my dirt track ability. So when I was a kid, 11, 12 years old, I did a few road races, and we ended up stopping simply because it was too expensive. We couldn't, my parents were really on a shoestring budget, especially trying to get me to the races when I was a kid. And we just couldn't afford it. It's basically the best way to put it. And my dad had a relationship with the Hayden family. He worked for the Haydens when they were kids. And when we went to Nikki's funeral in 2017, we're talking to Earl Hayden, and he was interested in wanting to help with me with my racing. And he ended up getting me a wild card ride with KTM when they did the KTM Cup. And I got hooked up with a guy by the name of Dale Quarterly, and he really liked me. I maybe didn't have the speed, but I had all the other things, and I was willing to learn. And he took me under his wing and brought me onto his team for next year, and I got hooked up with him and a guy that helps him, Bob Robbins. And I did that for 2 years. And I really, you know, road racing wasn't in a really good spot then. And flat track, that was 2019. Flat track was doing really good. They were on, you know, NBC and Factory Indian, Factory Harley, and Tim. And I had the ride with Tim, and Tim gave me a really good offer to race 450s the next year. And there was really essentially nothing in road racing. And I wasn't quite ready to go to a super sport ride yet. It's just too good what I had racing dirt track. Would I went road racing if there was a ride that was good enough? Absolutely. I would have thought about it. But really, I feel I'm where I'm supposed to be. I'm where I'm meant to be. I'm with the people I'm meant to be. This team is something I could have never dreamed of. And that's not just me talking just to promote them. It's truly what I mean. I mean, it's those guys, the group of guys I have over there. I really feel like I'm where I'm supposed to be. I don't feel like I should be anywhere else. Road racing, dirt track, and or road racing, off-road, motocross, surfing, anything. I feel like this is what I should be doing. So I love road racing, and you know, I'm not saying I never will road race professionally, but you know, just there was never really opportunity for me.
If you ever become a professional surfer, that's going to be a great movie, because some dude from the middle of the United States, Illinois, becomes a professional surfer. That's a good script, man.
Yeah, I don't know why I said surfer. My point was, yeah, just that I'm not really supposed to be doing anything else. I will not be doing surfing. Will not be anything that involves in the ocean. I hate sharks. I love water, but yeah, no surfing. That was really dumb to say. Not sure why I said that.
That you mentioned about the people around you, and obviously I've, you know, experienced that, and those people are amazing. It's a great team to be on. And you know, Tommy Hayden, you guys have been close, and he's the manager over there. And earlier you messed up saying something, just a couple of words or something. You said sorry. And that immediately, every time I hear the word sorry, for like when someone does something like real simple like that, it brings me back to this time in the truck where I think I ran into somebody. I nudged him, or I may have knocked him down. I can't remember. But I go in, and I was talking to Tommy. I'm like, yeah, like I told him I was sorry. And he goes, sorry, like, would you do it again? And I go, yeah, if I had to. And he goes, well, you ain't sorry then. So now, every time like I hear someone say sorry, I'm in my head, I'm like, well, would you do it again? And most 99% of the time, it's like, yeah, I will. It's just the habit of saying it. It's like, well, you ain't really sorry.
Yeah. It's typical Tommy Hayden, shoot you straight. He, quick story on Tommy. I was making fun of him. He was making fun of me one day, and I thought I'd take a jab back at him. And I said, you know, Tommy, I won two singles championships. I don't think you won any in the 450 class. He goes, yeah, I skipped the powder puff class. I was like, oh, shit. I'm going to keep my mouth shut now.
Yeah, he's quiet, but he's real quick with it. And when he speaks, it's something good.
No, he's very intelligent, very.
Extremely intelligent.
With trying to be like the ambassador that you are for flat track, what is one area, if you can pick one, that you would like to see improvements in the American flat track scene, be it amateur, professional? What would you like to see improved in flat track racing?
Well, I want to take a little bit of a different approach to that. I think a lot of people would say rules, schedule, bikes, teams, blah, blah, blah. You touched upon the amateur series. I feel like amateur racing is arguably in 2025 going to be the best it's ever been, period. Corey Dexter, Jeff Hires, those guys are doing great things. Just having races for these kids to go to, let alone a championship or whatever you want to call it. Corey's having awards. Jeff's having awards. They're both doing great things. Like when I was a kid, there was really only amateur nationals and maybe a winter series. Like there wasn't a whole lot like there was plenty of races around the country, but not like another championship you could go race. Especially with guys that used to race running it. It was usually, you know, people that just liked to put on races or were from that area, with the exception of guys like Steve Nace or old racers that put on outlaw events. But so amateur racing, I feel, is good. I feel like those kids have it really well. And if you're an amateur, get out there and race next year, because there's plenty of opportunity to race your motorcycle. And but as far as the pro scene, what I would change, when I said I'd take a different approach, I wish it was more of a show. And I know this is something I talk about to people a lot, is that when you go to a Supercross, and I, you know, you say, oh, you just compare it to Supercross, you want it to be like Supercross, like, yeah, like, compare it to, let's do what Supercross is doing, and it works. When you go to a Supercross, you take your family and you go because it's a show. If you want to watch the race, you would just stay at home and watch on TV. It's better coverage, to be honest. But you go because there's fireworks and fire and cheerleader dancers, and they're riding out, and loud music and smoke, and there's kids on 50s riding, and there's, you know, guys doing freestyle in the parking lot, and the kids can play a video game, and like there's stuff to do regardless of the races. Like when you go to a flat track, you're seeing flat track and that's it, with the exception of like sometimes there's, you know, a kid zone or something. But I just wish we did like opening ceremonies. I wish they turned the lights off and we played loud music and there was smoke and there was intermission stuff. And I just wish that there was more for the fans and more exciting to pump up the races. Like I said, you could easily go into rules and bikes and schedule and a lot of things, you know, need to be fixed. But if we could make it more of a show for the fans and get them excited, and I get it's not easy, I get it's not feasible, but it's definitely a lot easier than trying to come up with a rules package for 3 years down the road. Like, we could do this pretty simply, I would think. Let's just make it more exciting for them. Because right now, the fans we have are a raw flat track fan. They come watch flat track because they love it. They don't come bring their kids to watch flat track because it's, like, cool to watch. Like, yeah, it's cool to watch, but not because it's a show. They come because they love it. And, you know, the younger audience, they want to see a show. They want to see fire and loud things and fireworks and stuff. So I think that's what I would change if I had to.
Yeah, I've said it before. It's like we need to have a motorcycle race at a party instead of having a motorcycle race. Obviously, exactly. Much easier said than done. I would not want to undertake the task of trying to make that happen and run it smoothly every time and still make the racers happy, because then when you get too far into that aspect, you know, there's going to be people who are mad that they think now they're just, you know, at a show rather than a race. But in the end, it benefits everybody financially. You know, it makes our legacies bigger. It's just overall cooler.
No, and it's exactly right. I know it's a lot easier said than done, and I'm not saying give me it, I could do it better. I'm just saying that's my opinion. That's what I think.
Yeah.
Could make it better. Like, even when I've been to plenty of Supercross races, but when I go and they turn them lights off, it makes the hair stand up on my arms, man. I'm like, man, we're getting ready to see some. Like, it's making me get excited just sitting here right now. Like, what song is this guy gonna pick? Or like when I went to A1 and Jet had his video and it was like just the music, and he actually ended up having the UFC guy say his name and stuff, and it was like, man, that is just so cool. And like Supercross guy, like Jared's tried to do it, the ride out stuff, and it's been cool, and he had that guy do the voices for him. So yeah, it's just little, you know, I say little things, but it's just, you know, I just want what's best for it. And
like, I don't think it'd be too hard for them to do those videos. I remember back in 17 they did videos for a bunch of riders, and it wouldn't cost them that much or be that hard to make a video, like you said. It like for the Supercross guys, when they go out, they have those videos, like the ride out songs and the ride out videos, and they're pretty sick. They make your hair stand up. They get excited. The lights are low. There's fire going, and then all of a sudden you hear the bike and they take off and do a wheelie or whatever, pump up the crowd, throw a t-shirt. So yeah, no, that's exactly right. I mean, that's a step in the right direction. I don't think that part would be too bad.
Yeah, no, for sure. And like we've said, or like I just keep saying, it's a lot easier said than done, but you know, if we could, you know, the racing's always good, and flat track's not Supercross, and it's, you know, never gonna be Supercross. But if we could just start with the simple things and kind of work our way up, you know, I think it would be beneficial.
with something like that, you know, with Supercross, they're I guess they have a little bit of a benefit with start times when they start their events. It's either indoors or, you know, at night before, you know, it gets dark so early. Is that maybe something that would do better if they redid their rider intros instead of having the helmets off and waving at them? Maybe you guys have like an inflatable thing out by the entrance and everybody rides out onto the track and sort of picks their starting position from that instead of doing just the stand and wave.
The only reason I like the stand and wave is because it's flat track. Like the only series that has ever done it is flat track. You know, nobody else does that. So I do like having that. I think what would be interesting to try is like Supercross, like do your practice and qualifying in the morning. Like really the only fans that come to practice and qualifying are hardcore fans that want to see riding. And then you take a 3, 4, 5 hour break like they do and do fan walk and let fans do track walk. And during that time, you do your track prep, you get the track right, everybody gets a big break, and you wait for the sun to go down. And then that way, when the fans fill the stands, it's just race time. But I get it. Like, you know, there's obviously a lot more variables to that. It's a little bit different for us. And then those races like Peoria, Springfield, you know, you can't do that because they're day races. So there's obviously exceptions and it's different. But the walkouts, I like keeping those, like I said, just because it's flat track heritage. And it's probably the only time besides the fan walk people get to see us with our helmets off. I mean, hell, in Supercross, you barely get to see the athletes. So I think that's cool just because it's flat track. But, you know,
that does give you an extra level of sort of personability with the riders. So, yeah, I can definitely agree with that. And it sounds like Colby just volunteered to make everybody's hype video for next year.
Yeah, I say, you know, Colby's retired, he's got his podcast going, let's make him do it, you know, he can do the videos.
I'll send the wire information over to whoever needs it to get that going, and I can definitely work at it, or I can at least contract that out. But no, this has been so much fun. We've had you on here for an hour now. I don't want to keep you too long. I'm sure you've got something to do tonight, maybe some ice cream to clean up. It's still not the first of the year, so you can probably have a few more snacks like that. But I've been smiling and laughing this whole time, and I know Scotty's probably enjoyed this, and I think people are really going to enjoy this podcast. This was fun. It was just, you know, a good conversation between the three of us. Excuse me.
Yeah, no, for sure. I appreciate you guys having me on. I appreciate what you guys are doing. You know, you're really trying to help the sport of flat track, and I believe if we all do our little part, it'll help in a big way. Scotty, I really love what you do with your videos on YouTube about the races, and I believe you have the best interest in flat track, and you're really trying to do your part, even though you don't have to. Nobody has to, but you know, we're all trying to, and that means a lot to people that want to see it succeed. So no, I appreciate it, guys. You guys are good people, and I love listening to the podcast. So no, thanks for having me on.
Hey, we appreciate your time, man. We appreciate your passion, your podium interviews, and just seeing that emotion come out of you, and that seeing how much this sport means to you is really, I think, inspirational and uplifting to us as viewers. And I feel like it impacts, you know, riders who are aspiring to become professional and want to be competing against you, whether they're, you know, in a 65 class right now or whether they're 450 guys about to turn pro. I really think you're a great ambassador and a great face for the sport. So thank you for all you do in competing in this, and we're excited to see what the 2025 season comes. I will see you, I guess, at a Winter Throwdown for 1v1. I do have one final question, and I want to know where my t-shirt is, because I've been asking you about this for about a year now.
Oh man, I'm so bad about t-shirts, but I appreciate all those nice things you said before. I know it doesn't go overlooked, but I will take care of you, Scotty. I'm just, you know, you always come up right when I'm out. No, I'm just joking. But I've got some, and I got some sweatshirts. I'll have you taken care of it when you throw down. Don't worry.
I'll annoy you. I'll shoot you some messages leading up to that and some reminders. But we'll see you down there.
Yeah, that's cool. Thanks, man.
All right. Take care, Dallas. Tell the family I said hello, and have a happy New Year's. I was really hoping last year on Christmas Eve, it was like 60 out, and Dallas is from Mattoon, which is like 20 minutes away from where my fiance lives, and there's the motocross track there, Lincoln Trail. And last year on the 23rd of December, 60 out, and we got to do a ride day, so I was kind of hoping we'd be able to meet up then, but it's not looking as good. So but take care, tell the family I said hello, and have a happy holidays.
Yeah, you guys too. Merry Christmas and happy New Year, and thanks again, guys. I appreciate it.
wow, super cool to hear from Dallas, to hear about his travels to Australia. Again, such a great ambassador for the sport. I appreciate his appreciation for the history and what we, you know, we've been able to do on this podcast and with the YouTube channel and stuff. It's so fun every time we get a chance to talk to Dallas, and excited to see what next year looks like for him.
I like getting the insight, and I was serious when I said I was smiling and laughing a lot. My face is a little sore. Just it was good to reminisce with Dallas about some of the times we had and just laughing. He's funny. Seriously, his interviews are just the start. Being able to hang out with him in the pits and, you know, goofing around at a motocross track or even at his house, he's a funny kid, and I always have a good time with him. And one thing about him that a lot of people probably don't know is his movie quote memory is unreal. He's got a catalog of quotes from good popular movies, old ones, new ones, all of them.
Oh, we should have tested that. We should have pulled up some and tried his knowledge on that. Next time. Well, yeah. I'm sure we'll talk to him in the future.
No, that was great though. I'm so excited he was, you know, able to get on and share a little bit of experience from that trip to Australia. That's cool. I like we talked about last week with Andrew, I wanted to know what those tires were like. And it's neat to know that, you know, there's a chance they might work at a place like Medina, but they're not going to last. And it'd be so expensive to try to do it all day. But maybe something I'd like to give a shot one day. It'd be neat just to try.
How much further are you along on building your twin for Springfield?
Well, no, 450. The budgets are definitely not there for the twin. The Kawi twin sitting in my parents' basement, and that thing is not ready to go. But the 450... we have not done anything. No, we're in the same place we've been. I actually was thinking about it earlier today, and the budgets haven't been there. We're in deep negotiation talks. Do you have any potential interest in being a big sponsor on the team?
Interest, yes. Ability, probably not.
Okay. Well, we'll hit the Powerball tomorrow night.
Noted. I'll download whatever that app is, where you can buy tickets on online or whatever. No free advertising though.
No free advertising. No, man. I'm just happy. That was a fun little interview right there.
Good times, definitely good times. Happy to keep this going. It's good to chat with you. Not sure if we'll get another one done before the holidays. I think probably both ready to take some time with family and enjoy Christmas and New Year's. But excited for what's ahead for flat track racing. You know, Dallas touched on how big 2025 is going to be for the amateur stuff, and obviously that kicks off here in a month's time. Both of us are going to be hanging out at Winter Throwdown, and we can annoy Dallas about t-shirts and see how he does in the 1v1 down there. So looking forward to that. I'm sure we can probably get a guest or two on maybe before that event.
I'm getting so excited for that. It's going to be my first time going down there. I've watched it, especially last year, having the live coverage. That was amazing to be able to watch that at home. I was actually co-streaming that with the Supercross on the TV next to it because I needed all the action. I needed to be able to watch the flat track. I hope that we've got a streaming package for this year. I'm sure hopefully we'll know more soon in the future for the people that aren't able to make it. But luckily for me and you, we will be there in person. And I can't wait to soak that action up.
Yes, sir. So I think that's all I got for tonight, Colby. We'll stay in touch. And Merry Christmas. And I'll talk to you before then. Happy New Year as well. And thanks again for doing this with me and inviting me on to talk flat track racing. It's been a privilege to do these episodes, and I'm excited to keep this thing sideways in 2025.
Absolutely. Yeah. Just like Scotty said, I want to thank all the fans and wish everyone a happy holidays and a good new year. And we'll be back sometime after the first of the year. I'm going home to see my folks in New York, hopefully try to get on the ski mountain, but the weather's not quite cooperating at this current moment. But yeah, lap 7 of the Sideways podcast. Thank you to Dallas Daniels for getting on here and chatting with us for a little bit, just having a great conversation. And that is lap 7 of the Sideways podcast with your host, Colby Carlisle, and Scotty Taylor.